Thanks for listening to The Kick-Ass Life with David Wood. Stay connected on Facebook, / The Kick-Ass Life, on Twitter, at The Kick-Ass Life, and of course, at thekickasslife.com.
Hi, this is John Henry Brown, criminal defense attorney, and you're listening to David Wood on The Kick-Ass Life Show.
Make your life better?
This is the Kick-Ass Life Podcast with David Wood.
Hey, I'm back. Here I am, back in Canada, back in my little studio. Little is the appropriate word for this little studio. But how amazing, isn't it? I always think how amazing it is in this day and age where we can sort of wake up on the other side of the world and you're laying in a little tube, watching some movies or doing some work or reading a book, having a chat, and suddenly you're right across the world. And again, I want to make sure you guys get this. If you suffer with jet lag, you got to have a system. And I do. I have a system after all these years of travel where, you know, when you get back into your country, obviously when we're coming, we left on Wednesday morning and arrived back in Canada on Wednesday morning as they're a day ahead there. So that's a pretty extreme example of time difference. Again, few things I do, just if you want to take that tip with you. One is I drink lots of water. It's always good to keep hydrated. I make sure I intermingle that with a few gin and tonics. That's always important, as you know. And then, of course, I don't think about time. I don't never think about what time it is in the country that I just left or the country I'm going to. I don't ever concern myself with those conversations. And I hear people doing it all the time. Oh, back home, it's 4 a.m. That's going to bug you up right there. And then the last part is like when we arrived at 7 a.m. Into Vancouver, which means 7 a.m. And so you've got the whole day. And you're exhausted, right? Because you've been traveling for, been on the plane for 14 hours. And then, you know, by the time you left for the airport, you're talking about 18, 19 hours. And then by the time you get home, you're talking about 30 hours, maybe. So the secret I find is like yesterday. I mean, it was hard. I was tired. I wasn't myself. But, you know, we got some stuff done, did all the washing from the trip, 3 weeks of washing, which took half a day. But we went for a big walk, you know, went hiking. Came back and watched a movie just to relax, and I get the boys back tomorrow. Normally, I like to be in my best form. I don't want to get back into the country and have see the boys where I'm all pooped out. So so I spoke to their mom, and they'll be coming over today, or I'll go and grab them today. But the idea though is we went to bed around 11:30 at night, and push. So by the time we hit the pillow, we're exhausted. And you just fell straight asleep. In fact, I fell asleep halfway through a conversation, and that's really where it's at. If you want to, so don't mention, don't think about the time where you're going. Drink lots of water, and then stay up really, really late when you get home, and then just go to bed late so you're really pooped, so you can have a good night's sleep. So I wake up this morning feeling amazing. So here we are back in the studio, and there's a few things I want to share with you today. You know, really sort of getting back into the throw of things. Obviously, when I'm on the road. You do your best to do a great show, and obviously I attempted to bring you along to a lot of the adventures we were on and meet some of the people. But when I'm training, you know, it's a pretty full out kind of a, when I'm there, I'm all there, 100% of me. So, you know, unfortunately, the show obviously takes, it's very, very important to me, and I attempt to do both well. And sometimes when you're trying to do two things really, really well, sometimes one has to take a little bit of a back seat. So some of the sound quality and you know, the show setups were a little bit rushed. But I'm very proud of the fact that we can go traveling around the world and bring you with us. And you know, and I've heard already that some of you love the show. I really want to share a couple of secrets today that really changed my life. I was thinking in the shower this morning of what I wanted to chat with you about today. Before I do though, I want to talk about one of the reviews we've got. It's a 4-star review from Jake Simon. And the reason I want to talk about this, the title is Great Inspiration. This is on the American site. Remember, I can't see every country, so I often do the American reviews. Depends what computer I'm on. and the Canadian reviews. I did get to see a lot of the Australian reviews from other computers when I was over there, which was quite really cool. But here's one, and the reason I'm writing this, it's a 4-star review, and I liked his the reason he gave, and I want to talk about it a little bit. He says, I rarely write reviews, but I'm happy to give feedback to this podcast in any way that I can. Archie says, I'm happy to give back to this podcast in any way that I can. Plus, I listen via Stitcher, so I don't know if David gets to see stats since I stream the show. That's awesome. So that's really good news that people are coming in by Stitcher, and we don't get those stats. So I love the variety of content we get from the Kick-Ass Live. Everyone finds inspiration in their own way. So if you listen to enough episodes, you are sure to find guests of David's discussions that really line up with the inspirational ideas that click and resonate with you. Thank you, David, for all you bring to the podcast. It has truly moved me, which is great. He says, I have restricted myself to 4 stars for a reason. David, I hope you can appreciate, accept the candidness of this feedback. When you talk, I am listening 100%. Sometimes, however, some of your guests, even when they are absolutely have valuable information embedded within them, read this from another computer. Information embedded within their listening 100%, within their expertise, get close to that line of infomercially. It doesn't make me want to stop listening to the podcast, but it does make me feel manipulated once in a while. This may be my fault, as I found your podcast by way of holistic betterment and inspiration, whereas others may be coming from a background of researching how to transform your life to make more money. I get it. I've been there. I'm not rich, and I'm not against getting rich, but it isn't my motivating focus these days. Great show. I haven't missed an episode since I found the podcast. So that's awesome, and sorry about that mess up there. But hey, Jake, you know, what I really like about this is a few things. One is thanks for coming into the show, and I really appreciate it. I'm going to talk a little bit about feedback and how feedback changed my life, and I never want to minimize it at all, even though I made a little bit of a joke about the guy that wrote about my laugh, not liking my laugh. And I understand some people don't, including my sister, she told me. But that's fine, you know. It's not about being liked. When you do this kind of work or you do anything in life, if you really want to go through life, I know Eleanor Roosevelt is one of my heroes, and she says, you know, what other people think of me is none of my business. But obviously, you know, when you're doing anything where you, I think feedback becomes a critical piece of success. And I want to talk, share a couple of stories about that for myself. But what I also like was the fact it felt infomercially, and the fact that you came from that part of the world where so many of my friends are in that arena of, you know, the much more of a spiritual awareness, and find any kind of selling or can find any kind of selling offensive. Obviously, on the show, we don't do any sort of real promotional things. And you may have listened to a couple where, you know, I do plug their websites as a thank you, because obviously I don't pay them to come on the show. And I want people to really get that, you know, is that if I can drive people to their websites and I don't get a kickback, I have talked about doing joint ventures because it is a revenue stream, but I haven't really done any yet. I think with Jim Quick, we talked about doing it, and I drove some people to his site. But primarily, I just ask people, you know, how can I serve you? When I first talk to them, how can I serve you? What can you? How can this become a win-win for you? And I'm a real believer in win-win. So, but I think it's really important with this group of people that come from that place, which I really love the idea that you're so aware of that, and you sort of talk about, I'm not rich. However, I'm not worried about other people getting rich. But so many of my friends who come from that spiritual nature, who give so much of their time and their heart, you talked about coming from a way of holistic betterment. And so, you know, often don't charge or create value around their offerings. And especially in the training arena, it's very, very hard because they want to serve the world in such a beautiful way. And I'd say that a greater way to serve is to overcome that that disdain sometimes for any kind of promotion, and understand that, imagine if each one of you who are in that arena became masterful at promotion and selling what you create and driving more people, more traffic to it, then more people's lives will change. And I think a lot of people get stuck in that middle ground where they really never make money from their gift, and they're really, money almost becomes dirty for some. And I'm not talking about you here, Jake. But certainly for a lot of my friends, it almost becomes, it's almost poisons the act of service. And I really challenge that thinking and say, well, imagine as you become wealthy with it, because, you know, there's that great saying, you know, when if you have an asshole who gets rich, you just have a rich asshole, right? Money doesn't change someone like that, you know. But if you have a beautiful hearted, deeply spiritual, inspirational person who really understands how to live a pure life internally and externally and really do no harm in the world, but has a message or a gift that should be shared, and you make them wealthy, they just do more of that. They just go out there and serve in a bigger scale and have more impact and impact more lives. So I'll challenge that. And so next time you hear any kind of promotion, I want you to get excited about it and say, hey, this is good. Because you know, we want people to succeed financially, and this is their business. You know, this is what they do for a living. And so it's good. And if you love what they do, go invest with them, because that's truly people who invest their money with me. You know, that's hopefully a gift for them and a gift for me. I can afford to do more. I can afford to reach more people. The more money I make, the more impact I can have, the more charities I can support, the more of everything I can do, the more kick-ass life I can lead. And so again, if you're in that realm at all, I want you to challenge your thinking on this and really look at your financial blueprints. And we'll do more and more shows on financial blueprints. I recently was speaking to T. Harv Eker's assistant. Harv and I used to work together years ago, so I'd like to get him on the show. He does a lot of work in that arena of financial blueprints. In saying that, I'd like to share today a little bit of a story. I remember I left school when I was 15, and I really, you know, I was an angry kid, and it was interesting for me to sort of think back of that time, who I was. And because obviously who I was at that time and my belief in self was quite different to what it is today. And I remember when I first left school, I actually closed, not right away, but I moved up to a place called Hull in Northern England, Kingston upon Hull. And Hull suffered some really incredible damage through the Second World War. And there was this sort of weathered a period of post-industrial decline, they called it, during which the city gained unfavorable results on measures of social deprivation, education, and policing. That's how they term it. And truly, you know, it was a real scuzzle at the time. And I know Hull, and people listen from Hull because I can see the stats, and I'm not saying it is today. But when I lived there, it was like going from, you know, the world I knew and living in this place. I lived with this filthy little flat. And it was with a guy called Paul Grumbaum. He used to call me a bloody, actually it was an F in F, Ed Banger, he called me. He thought I was a little crazy. But Hull, I lived on a place called Annalby Road, and there were more murders on Annalby Road, I think, than anywhere else in England at the time. I got a job in a tailor's, and I wore a three-piece suit every day, but I only earned enough money to pay for my rent. I didn't have any money left over, and I used to sell like crazy in the store. And they were the thing that we called them spiffs. Certain clothing had these red tags on the coat hangers. And if they had a red tag on, we would make an extra bonus on it. And sometimes it'd be a pound or 2 pounds or something like that. And I was like the master salesman because it was survival. It was only survival, but I still didn't earn enough money. So I used to have to steal food. And so I was this expert shoplifter, and I became a shoplifter for years and years. And it wasn't always survival, unfortunately, but in the beginning, it started off that way, where it was just survival. And I used to steal like eggs and bread, and I would come back, and I only had a kettle in our house. We had no saucepan. So I'd cook eggs in the kettle, and then I'd drink the tea. I mean, it was crazy. And I remember our bathtub was so small. I'm 6'3". And if I sat up in the bathtub, my head would almost be touching the ceiling because it was really on this low part. It was on a little pedestal. And the ceiling was completely moldy. And then if I went down and washed my feet, my knees would almost touch this. I mean, it was just like this, you know, it was a great part of my history. But Hull was just an interesting place. And the people that I met there were very, very, very interesting and fierce, because there was a lot of survival, obviously. I mean, my situation, I had a job And, you know, I was doing all right. Yeah, I had to steal to just get by. But it was still very, very different from some of the other people there. But I was thinking back at the time, and I remember listening to Bob Dylan and some of his work. So I'm going to include Bob in the show today, and I'll bring in a couple of his songs. And his one that I really...
So proud about having to be scrounging your next meal. How does it feel? How does it feel to be without a home? Like a complete unknown, like a rolling stone.
Yeah, it was such a wonderful party. It almost seems so long ago now, you know, 51 now. I'd have been 16 then, maybe 17. But, you know, it was a different time. But what happened was when I came back to England, I sort of started in business again. And I was window cleaning. And I love the window cleaning. It was such a freeing spirit feeling. Sorry, that I was fiddling with the knobs, and so I get a little distracted sometimes. But it was just a very interesting time. And as I was window cleaning, and I started chimney sweeping, and I started a decorating company. And this is when I talked about the two big secrets that really changed my life. And, you know, the one was I started painting and decorating because I started to get this kind of feeling that of expanding my empire, because I had window cleaning rounds in about 9 different little towns. And, you know, I started the chimney sweeping. Didn't last too long. It's just a filthy job. But, I did it. And the interesting thing with the painting and decorating was I didn't think I needed to learn anything. And I painted a woman's house. She just asked me. She sort of came along, and I'd been cleaning a window. She said, "Do you know any decorators?" And this is kind of who I was at the time. I was just into survival mode all the time. And I said, "Sure, yeah. Actually, I said, I'm a decorator." And I kind of convinced her that I didn't have any stuff because it was old. I said, "Oh, my stuff's old now. So rather than bring it out here, why don't we just buy new stuff?" So she bought me all the new stuff, my pasting table, my paintbrushes, everything. And I painted her house. And, I think back to what kind of job it would have been, but obviously, it wasn't terrible, but I'm sure it wasn't great. And then I looked around in the newspaper and I saw this council job, which was like, this is where big money lies, where you could paint a lot of houses in a week. So imagine this, what I grew up on was a council estate. So it's rows and rows and rows and rows and rows of identical houses, and there's thousands and thousands and thousands of them in. And so, you'd get so much per house. It was all piecework. And I had no idea what I was getting into, but I went out and bought a painting van. It was a Renault 4 painting van, and it was one of these white vans. It looks really, really professional, all right? And it has an opening in the top where you can slide a big ladders in. So the ladders sort of, they're inside the van, but they angle out towards the sky. And, it looks incredibly professional. And so I had this van, I had a ladder, I had a jar with a couple of brushes in. I'd only done one job, right? So I had one jar, these two brushes, and I go to this job site. I get the job. I tell them I'm a decorator, and I start painting on these jobs. And, it was interesting because I had no idea what I was doing, zero. And there's all these guys there who do this for a living, and they would meet for tea at the sort of the appropriate breaks. Remember, we're in England, so there's always a tea break, right? Go down for tea breaks. And I didn't even notice the difference of what they looked like to what I looked like. What I looked like, because I had two brushes, I was using thinners, paint thinner, to clean the brushes between colors, all right? And so imagine me opening up this van, and inside is two brushes in a little jar and this ladder. and I'm wearing blue coveralls from a mechanic's coveralls, and they're all in their white coveralls for painting and decorating. And I'm just covered in paint, my hair, and my face, on my arms. I didn't use any cloths. I was just like, and my coveralls down the front of them were just thick from me sort of using my finger and then wiping it on my coveralls. And hey, this goes on. I do this couple of houses on this one estate, and these guys are moving, right? I mean, these guys are doing, 4 or 5 times to what I'm doing. And And finally, we go to a second job site, and these two guys come up to me, and they're just pissed right off. They're angry as heck. And they really want to tell me how much they think I'm an idiot. And they say it in the worst foul language you've ever heard. One of them was a black belt in karate, and he let me know that what they'd prefer to do is kick the shit out of me as opposed to just talk to me, because they thought I was a sham. They thought that I was making fun of their profession, that I didn't know what I was doing. And they laid it on so thick and so hard. And I remember standing there dumbfounded that I hadn't even noticed. I hadn't noticed how bad I was. I hadn't noticed the differences. I hadn't noticed that, you know, that my job was messy, that I was a mess, that the, you know, that I, you know, I didn't model anything. I nothing, zero. And I remember going home and I wish I'd been tougher. I wanted to fight him, to be honest with you. And there was two things that could have gone on inside of me. And fortunately, and I think why I'm sitting here today, is one of them went on inside of me, which was this idea that I could change. And so that's what started to do. I started to change.
Soon are the wheels still in spin? And there's no telling who that it's naming. Was the loser now will be later to win. For the times they are a-changing. From senators, congressmen,
you know, the interesting thing was I went home that night. And I did something that, again, that is a moment of change for me. Because I think feedback, you know, and that's why I read Jake's feedback. You know, he talked about, I hope you're open to feedback. And I realized that, yeah, not only am I open to feedback, it's something I teach. In fact, when I was in Australia, one of the big things I was teaching our leadership was really how to get feedback so that they can go to their own next level. And this feedback, although it was harsh, it was vicious, it was nasty, it was to the point. What I did is I went home and I started to look at everything. And I went down a store and I built a little toolbox and I bought every single tool that was possible to buy for painting and decorating. And I bought the coveralls and I went and had cloths made up, like I cut cloths. And I looked at all the tips and I started watching people. And I started watching all the decorators at our job sites. And they would have their putty on their paint. They had these little paint pails and they'd have their putty stuck to the side. So if they came across a crack in a window, they would simply nip a little piece of putty and they use their thumb. And there was all these tricks and tips. And I started looking for every tip and trick from these masters. And some of them have been painting for years. And some of them were really, you know, they'd gone through school of painting. And so they really understood what they were doing. And so I started doing that and I started watching and I started shortcutting. And then I decided that what I would do was I would get into business for myself. And I ended up doing a job in Sloane Square in London. This is about a £150,000 painting job, right? Not painting, but it was a refurbishment. And I had the painting contract. And so I ended up employing these two guys. And I employed a guy that was a master. I mean, this guy was about 70. He still needed money, though, because he's a bit of a drinker. And I used to stand behind him and watch him. And he thought I was watching him for, you know, because I wanted to see that he did a good job. What I was always watching for was how he did it, you know, how he did it. And I started, you know, building my own decorating company and employing these two guys. They stayed with me for a while. And it was like a complete shift from one day to the next. I remember walking there the next day and feeling more proud and being more observant and asking for help, going to people and saying, hey, I'm doing this thing. Can you give me the tip? And you know, in the end, when you opened my door, there was a toolbox on one side, you know, with all my tools in, you know, there was a pile of cloths that I would, you know, because the cloths, you know, I'd come back to the tea room and there'd be no paint on me. And I actually became one of the fastest painters. I'd walk into someone's house on a decorating job and I could go into that house, throw down my tarps. I'd have the ceiling painted in just a very, very short order. And I could paint through a house so, so quickly. And I started making a lot more money, of course. But I was also spotless, absolutely spotless. So I went from being the messiest, dirtiest, filthiest painter you've ever seen that had no clue. And then one of the tips, if you do a lot of painting, of course, was, you know, all of the colors, I'd have different pots with their, and the pots were bigger, not my little jam jars that I was using, but pots were bigger, they had water in. So all my strong colors would be in one, all my whites would be in another, blah, 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 right? And so I'd just be able to pull out a brush, give it a flick into the paint, and I'd be painting. It was so quick. And so this was one of the big lessons of my life, was how to take the feedback. And it really, really made such a massive difference. And even if the feedback came in a vicious form, what I asked myself the question, and it's something I still do today, and it's happened to me recently in the last few years, and really helped me a lot in the last few years, again, with vicious feedback. So when someone starts getting on my ass and starts to really give it to me, the first thing I ask myself is, so what am I doing to create this? I don't worry about how they give it to me, because obviously these guys, everyone has a reason why. If they're vicious about it, it means they're really upset about it. Or they can be, maybe they're a dick. But within their feedback, there's something, there's a truth in there somewhere that I can learn something. And that's typically when I'm getting feedback that's not so great. I don't worry about the how it's done. I don't worry about, you know, whether it's fair or unfair. I don't get into that pity party or that victimhood of myself, because I realize there's something there for me to learn. There is something golden in there. And if I'm willing to not worry about the way it's presented. Now, can you become a master at feedback? Yes. In fact, I've created feedback forms, and I'll go through that with another show. It's really how to give feedback in a beautiful way. But one of the ways, of course, is I always ask for is permission. Permission-based feedback is always imperative, all right? And I think before I go on to this last piece of the lesson, I think I should play another bit. Bob Dylan, I love this song.
I feel I'm knocking on heaven's door. Knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door.
I just feel like singing.
Knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door.
I shouldn't sing after 30 hours on a plane.
Knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door. Knock, knock, knocking on heaven's door.
I'm out of tune here, but I don't worry.
Mama put my gun.
So we just got a couple minutes here, and so the other big part of that lesson is the idea that of modeling and the shortcut to success. And I know Tony Robbins is one of the master modelers, and it's so easy to watch somebody do something and be fascinated by what they do and interested in what they're doing and look for those little tips and nuggets and those little gems that will allow you to really take your game to the next level. And there's so much threat typically, and especially in the corporate world. I mean, I was doing some work in Australia in the corporate world, and it's always a challenge, you know, when you put a lot of people with different personalities into one little place to work. But I mean, if you're listening to the show and you want a kick-ass life, then the big lessons here is, you know, it doesn't matter what the feedback looks like, own it. Own something and look for something. Look for something within that's the truth. Don't worry about whether it's right or wrong or the delivery was right or wrong. Don't concern yourself with any of that. And stay open-hearted to the person that gives it to you. I was sharing a story that one guy, when I first started doing the contract I'm doing right now, I've been with a company now for about 7 or 8 years. There was a number of people that really didn't like what I was doing. And I came in, sort of my gradient was a lot off. And, you know, and I was really threatening my job was to really shift the culture. And so in the beginning, it was quite threatening because I didn't come in slowly. I came in with both guns blaring and I pissed some people off. And one particular guy was really vicious in his feedback and very vocal publicly. And whether I liked it or not, again, using the same mechanism, I always first kept a really open heart towards him. And I never, ever took it personally. And that's a big thing. Don't take it personally, even though it was personal. And that may seem like a paradox, but what's better? Is it better to take everything personally and walk around with this head full of doubt and this internal conversation that beats the crap out of you all the time, and then this upset at somebody else? Remember, if you're angry with somebody or you hate somebody, it's like drinking poison and expecting them to die. You're the one with the cancer inside you, the hatred. So I practice immediate forgiveness, and it's just easier. Kick-ass life, immediate forgiveness. So what, right? And so then look for the gem, what they're trying to say to you in the mechanism that they have. That's all they have. They can only do it in their style. And then open-hearted to maintain that friendship, because I promise you, every single time, and I can think back through my life, that the turning points of my life have come at the hardest feedback. And I think for most of us, if we get feedback and we're not willing to take it, then what happens is we get stuck. And we'll stay there for years and years. And our pride and our egos will keep us stuck in a very small box. And so feedback and modeling. And when we want to escape, if we want to come better, look at the best person in your company, in your profession. Find out who they are and watch them. And look for their tips and tricks. Look for the things they do well. Ask for their help, for goodness sake. Go up to them and befriend them. Stay open. Eat some humble pie. And keep your ego in check, where you want to retaliate and get upset and pissed off and fight these fights. And I promise you, as you look back over your lifetime, at those moments when someone's been harsh for you, just ask that question. What am I doing to create this? What am I doing to create this? All right. And what do I want to learn from this? What do I want to learn? What am I willing to take from this? So, you know, with that said, you know, it's that time. I can't believe it. 30 minutes went so fast. That's what happens when you're back in the studio. I've got all my gadgets in front of me now, able to play some music, although we tried that when I was in Australia, you know, but I want to say to you, thanks again. I didn't start with gratitudes, but I'm ending with gratitudes. Thank you. Thanks, Jake, for your feedback. I do read all of the feedback, and you know, I'm open to it and I appreciate it. And yeah, I want to say that this show is your show. And so, you know, get stuck in. Come and join us on Facebook, and I'd love to hear you there, and love to, I really want to start putting more energy into our Facebook page. So, you know, The Kick-Ass Life on Facebook, and yeah, come join us and we'll play together and grow together and give each other some feedback once in a while. And thanks a lot. I really appreciate you. Speak to you later. Ciao, guys.
That was kick-ass.